T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
Thanks for listening to the Dusty and Cam in the Morning podcast, brought to you by your local Les Schwab Tire Centers, where I get my wild country tires. Les Schwab, doing the right thing since 1952.
The latest rage for kids is driving entire neighborhoods crazy. It's called
Dusty and Cam in the Morning.
That's like an alarm clock.
With Dusty Hera.
Well, you want to woo-woo?
And NFL veteran Cam Cleland.
It's that woo-woo.
Dusty and Cam in the Morning on 1080.
They think it's a fad. It's going to go away. It's not going away. It's driving me nuts.
The Fan.
All right, hour number 3, Dusty and Cam in the Morning. The glide path into the herd, as Larry Scott would say. Larry Scott's got some big decisions to be making today. Actually, I don't think this decision is even in his hands anymore. It is in the hands of the university presidents, who will be having a conference call today, and reports are that they will vote to decide whether or not they will move on with football, cancel the season and postpone it until the spring, or delay, and bump this thing back a little bit longer to see if numbers do subside in a lot of the hotbed areas across the Pac-12. But this is a big day for the Big Ten and the Pac-12. Both of those conferences do have votes that are expected today, and there's been new information that has been handed over to them. Pete Thamel of the New York Times, he said that, you know, Pac-12 coaches and ADs got a sobering medical perspective from a group of Pac-12 doctors last night. Source called it eye-opening, and the information on myocarditis made it real. Well, that's a quote. Quote, made it real. The doctors also expressed concern about proximity that comes from full contact practice. Quote, it's all in the president's hands, a source said. So we should have a decision coming up today on this. And everybody's wondering, well, what is this information that is coming out? And what do we know at this point? Well, I mean, myocarditis, according to like the reports that I'm reading from folks, is that it's something that it's an inflammation of the heart. And when you are exerting exercise, and it's, you get it, a lot of viruses have it, like the cold, common cold, influenza, H1N1, you can get myocarditis. And like if diagnosed and treated, I've from all the reports, I am no doctor, no cardiologist here, but it is something that can be followed and I guess treated. But with COVID, it is something that is an effect after you are done kind of battling that virus. And that appears to be the thing that has been that, quote, sobering points of the medical advisory board's, I guess, papers that they handed over to them, documents that they handed over to them yesterday for the presidents to review and vote on. Well, one of the doctors on that medical advisory board is Dr. Dave Petron. He is the Utah team doctor, and he went on The Drive on ESPN 700 in Salt Lake City yesterday. And I have a few clips that we cut out from Dr. Petron that just talks about where the Pac-12 stands on testing is where we'll start.
Anything over 7.5% of positive tests is in the red, then the recommendation, if it was that high, would be to do frequent testing as frequently as daily. If those numbers move down, percent positive tests move down more to the 5 to 7.5% range, then the testing might be every other day. And if it's less than 5% and the cases are less than 30 cases per 100,000 in the community, then the testing would go to every 3 days or maybe even as little as weekly.
Now, you take into that, like he's talking about, he says there, as far as testing goes and what is going to be asked, that's in the community, right? The entire area, the city and county in Oregon, we do it by county, right?
So that's all about what's going on around you locally.
And the 7.5% of a positive test rate is one. And then the 30 per 100,000 in testing goes for, or the 30 of 100,000 residents per 100,000 residents. You know, Benton County, I think, is right around 200 and something thousand people. Lane County is closer to 400,000 folks. So then you're starting to do the math there. That's 120 people for Lane County, and, you know, what, between 60 and 90, depending on how high it is in Benton County, the number of positive tests, right? So test rates are something that is being delivered to the university presidents on, hey, if you are over this 7.5% test rate, that is putting you in a red zone. He said Salt Lake City is in that zone. Arizona is in that zone. And from what I was looking at, I don't know what the test rates are in Lane and Benton County, but there, I saw that yesterday, you saw what, 5 positives, I think, in Lane County, and that was it. So they are kind of below that threshold of trending towards 120 in a week. But that is something that they are going to be tracking on is, okay, it is feasible if you do want to go on with football, but you have to really keep an eye on tracking how many tests are happening. And that can get spendy, right? If you were up to over that 7.5 threshold, you're testing daily. All of your athletes.
It gets really expensive really quick. So it's important that the local communities are trying to do their part.
And this is where it absolute 100%. But then he said that one of the other options that they have is there is a cheaper route to go on, and that is the antigen testing. And this is where it kind of gets into one of the parameters that they're talking about is, can we get our hands on these?
We feel very strongly in the Pac-12 and really to make football safe, that we need to get the results back in less than 24 hours. And then we think we can augment testing with this point-of-care test, which is basically a test of an antigen to an antibody. And that test costs as little as a few dollars, and the result is nearly instant. But the sensitivity of that test is about 80%, which is not great. So that means that there would be some false negatives, which we really don't want to afford to have. But if you repeat the test over and over, in other words, if you do 2 of the point-of-care tests, then the sensitivity goes up to about 95%. You do 3, it goes up to 99%. And so we think we're kind of on the cusp of being able to really mobilize some of these point-of-care tests, and by doing that, make return to play safe.
And that's an interesting point that he says, like making return to play safe, right? And it's not as if he's just sitting there and ruling any of this out. And that, again, this is Dr. Dave Petron on the Drive on ESPN 700 down in Salt Lake. He's a University of Utah doctor, and he's on the student athlete medical advisory board. And so just lay it on out there. What are the requirements?
Let me just go down through a few of the things that will be required to play football. So a lot of the things are easy to accomplish, and I think some of them are difficult. And again, it depends on how rampant the virus is in the particular community. For instance, that percent of positive tests in Arizona not too long ago, I don't know what it is just recently, but it was as high as 24%. So when something's going that rampant, I think it's going to be very difficult to resume football, at least in that, you know, in that university.
Again, that goes back to what you just said, Buck. Is the community kind of taking care of it?
Yeah, that schools like Arizona and Arizona State essentially wouldn't have a chance unless their community has it figured out better than they have it now.
And then it goes down to, is it safe?
If we can do these resumption of contact and competition requirements that I just talked about, I think they'd be very safe. So the original document from the NCAA, the recommendation was 72 hours before the beginning of a football game. So if you're playing a game on a Saturday, you might test somebody before they get on a plane on a Thursday and hope that the results are back prior to the game. But it's really, that's not good enough. And so ideally, if we could test somebody within 24 hours of competition, and that and the tests all week have been negative, and that test at the same day of competition is negative, really the risk of spreading the virus is essentially zero, because people that are playing are not infected by the virus. But the testing has to be ramped up significantly from where we are right now.
And one of the things that he highlighted in that interview as well is that the problem with it right now with the testing is that there's that backlog where people aren't getting their tests for multiple days. And he said you can't overwhelm, you know, local testing for the sake of getting college football done, right?
Listen, and we saw this bite baseball, right? I mean, the lag in the testing going on with the Marlins is what caused essentially ended up causing their outbreak. I mean, they made some decisions in there too that were, you know, less than ideal. But at the same time, if they had known right away what their test results were, they might have been able to stop it. And so you have to be in a situation where you can get those results for it to work.
And I think that it is important. And the reason why I want these clips from a doctor who's talking about it to be played is that it isn't that they're ruling it out. They're not.
No, on the contrary, he says we can do this.
Yeah.
He says we can do this.
But the standards need to be much higher. If you are going to do it safely, what they are recommending is that this thing needs to be far more extensive than it is, which what it comes down to is, are the universities going to be willing to pony up that money to do it? Whether it's daily testing.
Exactly.
Or a commitment to making sure that you're paying, maybe it's, I don't know. Well, he's recommending that you don't overwhelm the local medical community, but he also is saying that, look, this isn't just a football thing. These are fall sports. So it's not just your football team. It's your volleyball team. It's your soccer team. It's your cross country teams, that all of those sports are included in this. And it's not just 100 tests or over 100 tests for your football roster. It's all of the coaching staffs, all of the support staffs for all of the sports. And that is where it becomes very dicey. And that isn't even getting into the myocarditis information that they have in there, which according to multiple reports now is the thing that is concerning Big Ten presidents and Pac-12 presidents. And I don't know anything about that. All I know is that where the Pac-12 stands right now, it's a financial issue for them. And are you willing to pony up those big bucks? And it goes down the lines of, all right, there's a lot of unknowns still about this. And the myocarditis appears to be one thing that is scaring a lot of the decision makers in not just the Pac-12, but the Big Ten as well.
Yeah, independent of that specific issue, it sounds like the equipping these teams and these schools and the athletic departments really with the right testing is going to be expense-based. And then it seems like it's almost becoming a battle of the haves versus the have-nots, the people who have the boosters, the people who have the funding. And frankly, the athletic departments, the state, the universities that have the will to continue to push this through, there may be people in the Pac-12 that say, you know what, why would we throw this kind of money at this when we don't really think it's that safe or that important in the first place? Whereas there might be people in other parts of the country that say, if we can do all this testing, then hell yeah, we're doing this.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's where you see Scott Frost at Nebraska, James Franklin at Penn State, Jim Harbaugh, Michigan, Ryan Day at Ohio State. They are going against the votes of their university presidents, which 12-2 voted in favor of a cancellation of the season. I guess Scott Frost would be the only one that is not, because the two votes to keep going were from Nebraska and Iowa. Hear what the resolution that Scott Frost may be looking down at next, because the coach is saying, hey, Big Ten, if you're not in, we may be out. Dusty and Cam on the Fan. 8:17, Dusty here, Buck with me. We have got something brewing around college football where the Big Ten yesterday, what a whirlwind it was. It was part of our P1 social. And I would love for you guys to chime in on the Fan text line, 503-250-1080. The college football season, up to the players or up to the presidents? Because it just seems like it's divided on who should make this call, which is wild to me. But I'd love to hear what you guys all feel, guys and gals all feel out there. Because you're starting to see even a lot of the football coaches go against what their administrations are even saying. And look, they want football. It's all they know. And look, I do have a little bit of empathy, and I think that we all should out there, for people whose everybody's lives that have been turned upside down by this. And it's now like college football coaches are sitting there in lives which have only revolved around football their entire life. It is getting turned upside down. And a lot of them don't know how to handle that, right? And that's why they're going, you know, this, I didn't think this was going to affect me. You know, they can, a lot of these guys can handle getting fired from a job, but they know that they could go and find another job coaching somewhere and football will still be there for them. And what they're kind of feeling now is like, well, football might not be there for me this fall.
Yeah, it's a jarring potential realization to have.
And I can feel that. Like, I can feel that for those coaches and kind of what is happening in this world. I mean, heck, we talked to Bruce Barnum at 7 a.m.
You can feel some of the apprehension in what he's going through. Absolutely.
Yeah, he was talking about, I asked him, when was the last time you had a fall without football? And he said it was in sixth grade when his family moved to Juneau, Alaska, and they didn't have a football team. Barney's 56, so that was like 45 years ago that Barney didn't have football in his life. And that is a long time. And a lot of these guys are going through this. So you're seeing that fight back. And heck, Ryan Day, the head coach at Ohio State, he was saying, I will do anything I can to kind of go to bat for my guys, and I will fight to have this season go on. Because, look, there's guys like Nick Saban, Ryan Day, Jim Harbaugh, James Franklin, and their messaging is very similar. It's like, hey, being on campus is actually safer than them going back home, where you don't know what protocols, what areas they're going into, as far as safety from COVID or safety from other things. Just having football and school as a guiding path for them in their lives, they don't know kind of what you're sending some of these guys back to. I saw Kenny Hill from Mississippi State was saying, I don't want to go home. Like, I don't want to do it because my hometown, I don't like it. It's not safe. And so then you have these coaches that they understand that they're fighting for that. And they're also fighting for, look, if we're being honest here, it's their livelihoods too. Because if you know money's coming in, how are paychecks going to be cut? You know, for these coaches and their salaries and all that stuff. So players might not get paid, but the coaches are.
The ripple effect of what happens here, though, is, I mean, it's astounding what all is on the line when you consider the athletic side, the financial side, the health side. There's just so much to be considered.
So Scott Frost yesterday, this leads us to, all right, so if these coaches are going to lead that fight and lead that charge, but the Big Ten ultimately does cancel football today, which that vote is expected to happen. But we also could just see it pushed back and delayed to see if things get better in a month or 2 months and just move back from September 26th start to October, in a late October start. We may see that be a decision because there is kind of this growing sentiment that kicking the can down the road is a viable option. And I personally, I think it is. I think it is. Because what is the difference from starting in October 26th and or September 26th? It's a month. If you can play it October 26th, then that saves you a lot of headaches if you just say, no, we're going to move it to the spring right now. And if you move it to the spring, then you're into, all right, how long is this abbreviated season going to be? Because these guys need to get back on campus and back on the field come next fall to get back on a semi-regular schedule. And so I am pro kick the can down the road a little bit more. But as we heard from Barney earlier, he said his guys felt relieved because there was that finality of, okay, this is what we're doing and this is our plan moving forward.
There was so much ambiguity and so much unknown that this is kind of the dance with the devil that we've been doing this whole time, right? The weighing, wanting to make a decision and just have something decided right now versus, well, we don't know, we'll figure it out later. But that is anxiety inducing to just wait and wait and wait. But it may not be prudent to just make a decision because you might have more time to be able to wait.
Well, if that decision is made, Nebraska coach Scott Frost, he's got a plan.
We want to play a Big Ten schedule. I hope that's what happens. Our university is committed to playing no matter what that looks like and how that looks. We want to play no matter who it is or where it is. So we'll see how all those chips fall. We certainly hope it's in the Big Ten. If it isn't, I think we're prepared to look for other options.
Like what? You're going to go join another conference temporarily because, I mean...
Try to have an independent season? I mean, I don't know where you'd go.
The SEC isn't taking you for 1 year. The Big 12 isn't going to take you for 1 year.
But maybe it's a scenario where, well, especially not after they left the Big 12, but I wonder if it's a scenario where there are teams that locally say we are going to opt out or that they aren't willing to pony up financially for the testing, and then you're like, are you looking to replace a team in your conference, perhaps?
Yeah.
And would that work there?
We have seen that during World Wars, you know, where they'll just play a weird schedule, and you'll have, I saw on Twitter, like, there was an 1890 something, Michigan played like a balloon school or something like that. And it's like, what?
A balloon school?
Yeah.
Come again?
I don't even know what that is.
I don't either.
But those days are gone, because if you roll Nebraska out on the field with a D2 school, it's like, yeah, we're going to push through too. That will be a bloodbath.
Yeah, there's no
on the field.
That doesn't really serve a purpose there.
It is a different world than some of these other instances where we've seen these kind of patchwork schedules put together during trying times. You can't do that anymore. Like when Georgia Tech won a game like 240-0 or whatever it was a patchwork team where they literally like were bringing people off the street to play in that game.
Yeah, I think it was 222-0. It was Cumberland they beat, right?
That isn't going to fly, because you're not going to be getting big bucks on TV for that either. If that's your point is to save your season, and it's not going to help any of your guys get to the NFL, because everybody evaluating that would be like, I can see what you're playing. That's not anything you'll see at the next level. So those things are unrealistic. And joining another conference for 1 year is unrealistic. What is going to happen here is we have this, it seems the Pac-12 and Big Ten are joint at the hip right now. And they are appearing to be on a collision course with, they will make a decision today, potentially, as to whether or not they go to the spring or they play in the fall as scheduled or bump it back a month or whatever. I hope they bump it back. That is growing a little steam, but it still appears that, because we were talking about that with Dr. Petron's audio that we were playing earlier, is that the report that they got from the medical advisory board, the Pac-12 that is, was, as Pete Thamel put it, sobering, according to his league sources, because of the myocarditis, the inflammation of the heart, information that was in the document that was sent along to the Pac-12. That is just what's being reported right there. If that is enough concern for the university presidents, I could see them just saying, nope, we're going to go spring. And here's where we are. The Big Ten and the Pac-12, if they go to the spring, and the ACC and the SEC, which it appears that they are just going to be sitting there and standing pat and waiting and waiting. And then their plan is to kick the can down the road. That's what their plan is. Then the Big 12 becomes kind of the linchpin of whether or not we have college football or not. Because apparently they have had their meeting and they're split in half, 5-5.
It's so weird the way this is hanging in the balance, again, among conferences and then within conferences.
Yes. And so with this, you're looking at, could the Big 12 be the conference that kind of spills it over the top? And then once you have three of the Power Five, boom, that forces the hand of everybody else and you just move it to the spring. Or the Big Ten and Pac-12 maybe reverse course and say, all right, well, I guess we're going with everybody else. The Big Ten has been the leader in this, though. And Kevin Warren, their commissioner, has caught a lot of heat.
New commissioner.
Yeah, he has caught a lot of heat for making these decisions. And so, I don't think it's right for him to catch heat, because it's ultimately not his call. It's the university presidents that are his bosses, and they're voting and they're listening to the medical advisory boards for their respective schools.
But could he put a slowdown on this train and try to postpone and try to buy time himself? I don't blame him for wanting to make the right decision, but does he have to make the decision right now?
No. And that's why I'm on board with
Right. Kick
the can down the road.
Right.
Do it. But when you pose it to university presidents who... Look, athletics are important to their universities. They know that. It is their front porch. It is not the highest of priorities for them. And so if you were going to ask a lot of the academics, you know, all right, what do you think we should do? They're going to go, well, just wait then. We'll just wait, because, look, it's not of the utmost important to us. It's important, but it's not number one, two, or three on our list. And this is where we get into the conversation of, all right, there's a camp of people saying, do the players make the call or do the presidents make the call on this? Because the players are the ones that are going to be out there, right? They're the ones that are going to go. And that, to me, is a little bit misguided. Get your feedback on the fan text line, 503-250-1080. Dusty and Cam on the fan. Here's Buck. All right, it's amazing to me that this discussion has gone away from what the medical professionals are believing and just whether or not the players want to do it or not. And that's kind of where this whole conversation about whether or not college football season will go on is right now. Because it is at the point where, like, I've seen a lot of it coming up on social media now, like the push is, well, the players want to do it. And there's no doubt about it, the players want to play. There's no doubt about it that the coaches want to coach and that they want to have football this year. I don't think that even the guys in the We Are United and all that, I mean, you would see mass exodus and opt-outs if they didn't want to play and be on campus. And it is their livelihood. But the concerns of medical professionals and the universities are the ones that are going to guide whether or not college football happens. And we heard from Dr. Petron, the Utah doctor, earlier this hour, and he says it can be done, but it just seems the way he breaks it down, like you're going to have guaranteed daily testing, 24-hour turnaround on results, and, you know, hopefully you get antigen testing done where, you know, he said there's about 80% success rate in that. And you have also the factor of it all is dependent on what your community's numbers are. And you have to test more if your community is over 7.5% positive test rate. This is a guy who's on the medical advisory board for the Pac-12 who said in an interview yesterday. He's saying, then you have to test like daily. And there's going to be an issue here. If you don't quite know how much these universities are going to have to be paying for their testing and pony up. Because if you have to test daily all season long, it's not just football. You're looking at soccer, volleyball, cross country, all of them. Because you have to tell, you can't just sit there and be like, oh yeah, we're only going to test football players.
Yeah, that won't work. I mean, you are all in. I mean, it has to be, there are no half measures here. This is an all or nothing proposition. And the schools who have the funding to do it and I guess have the capacity to do it are going to want to try, even if their presidents and their leagues say that they're not supposed to.
One of the things for the players to make this decision, though, is why don't they sign a waiver? I've seen a lot of folks out there just allow them to sign a waiver. Well, 5 days ago, actually, the NCAA revoked liability waivers. They said for COVID, you cannot have your athletes sign a liability waiver. So by the NCAA, they're just saying, no, you can't do that. The NCAA has made that call. So that's out of question for the athletes to just sign a waiver and go on with it. And that had political pressure behind it. Two senators reached out to the NCAA and were like, dude, these aren't your employees. You can't have them sign a liability waiver and just go on, even though you do sign a lot of paperwork that I don't know if anybody reads when you're signing your scholarship check and your scholarship papers and you're signing your, at the beginning of the year, your medical stuff. There's probably a lot of stuff that is in there that is liability-esque, right?
I'd imagine, yeah. There has to be some sort of assumption of risk from a player when they go to sign up. You're literally signing a permission slip to play football.
But they're saying for COVID-19, you cannot have a liability waiver. That is from the NCAA. So then that goes out the window there. And now you're having coaches having to come out and say, and this is 100% the truth, right? Ohio State is doing a good job with their testing and their protocols. Michigan, and Jim Harbaugh wrote a big letter where he just kind of laid it all out there on how many positive tests they've had on their football program, so on and so forth. That is great. James Franklin did the same thing. Nick Saban, Dabo Swinney. Look, we know that there's a lot of these programs that are having great success. Oregon State and Oregon are. They're having really good success.
Yep.
Now, there was a report last night that Oregon had 9 positive tests in athletics. Well, that's been amended to 9 students on the entire campus, because that's the way Oregon is reporting it, is their entire campus, not their student athletes.
And I think that Oregon State, the most recent numbers we had, that through 7 weeks of voluntary workouts, they had 3 total positive tests in their entire athletic department.
And this is where it comes down to, this is out of the players' hands. It is out of the coach's hands. And whether you think that is right or wrong, it is. This is 100% and wholly on the presidents of the universities. Because conference commissioners, and look, people love taking their shots at Larry Scott. This isn't Larry Scott's call. You know, he's going to be
a bystander to this one.
And that's my question is, where's Larry Scott in all this? Because Greg Sankey's out there, and he's laying all, he's done like 8 interviews today.
Is he just hands up right now? Like Larry, that is?
I think so. Because he knows that, one, his reputation isn't good enough to get the benefit of the doubt on a lot of things. And Sankey does have that leeway a little bit.
But even if your reputation isn't good, isn't it your job as a leader to try to push it one direction or another if you think,
yes,
or to preserve it in one way or another?
But I think he's just waiting for his university presidents to give him some direction because you don't want to push against the grain. You know, if they go and they have their meeting and their vote today, you sit there and you go, all right, well, I was sitting there saying, hey, we're just going to be patient. We're going to kick this thing down the road. But then they make the decision, just cancel it altogether. You know, he's in a lose-lose. But this goes down to, you know, they're having daily calls.
Oh, of course.
You can read the room and see where this thing is heading and start, you know, preparing for that direction. That's all Greg Sankey's doing right now is he's just saying, hey, I'm getting everybody ready for what we're going to do. You know, and when we make a final decision on it, it won't be a surprise to anybody. Whereas what the Big Ten and the Pac-12 are doing are more or less surprises to people, including their peers in the Power Five conferences. And I think that's where a lack of communication, those communication letdowns are happening, is that, right? So if Kevin Warren of the Big Ten, John Swofford of the ACC, Bob Bowlesby of the Big 12, Greg Sankey of the SEC, and Larry Scott are on a phone call together, right? You better know what your presidents are thinking, or you're going to be leaving,
yes,
the other guys with their pants down, which
that
is what
is
happened.
Your job.
Which is what happened with the Big Ten when they made their decision to go to a conference-only schedule, right? And that's when you heard, you know, the reports were that conference commissioners were feeling a little bit betrayed by the Big Ten and the Pac-12.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's no surprise if you're not communicating and getting that, yeah, kind of sense from your university presidents on where you're at. And it's a big divide in college football right now, in college sports right now. And this is why, if the NCAA just did a job, and I don't want to say do their job, because this isn't their job, because the way that this organization is run is so dysfunctional that it isn't in their job requirements to have a handle on these things. Though I think every reasonable human goes,
something,
yeah,
is important.
Every reasonable human would look at it and go, yeah, no, you should be a big voice in all of these conversations right now. But
what would you say you do here?
But they don't do anything. And
right,
they have no power in this except for apparently to make liability waivers exempt. Like you can't do them, guys. And that's basically all the power that they have here instead of having one singular voice to say yes or no. And that is where the NCAA has gotten into this mess. And I think that this whole thing is continuing to lead into a separation of Power Five and then just letting everybody else do their own thing, because the Mountain West and the MAC, they have moved their seasons to the spring. And you've had UConn this morning, UMass, announced that they're moving their seasons to the spring. The divide that we all knew was there between the non-Power Five and the Power Five is getting even bigger than ever. And if you have a couple of conferences just playing in the fall and the other one's playing in the spring, it gets even bigger, because that divide then becomes amongst the Power Five programs. And if all the Power Five just plays in the fall and everybody else moves to spring, good night. Turn out the lights, NCAA. The Power,
yeah,
Five's gone.
Yep.
Because I think one thing that they are realizing, one thing that they know now more than ever, they need a commissioner, they need a voice, and they need a guy or gal that can have some
leadership,
unity,
that can lead them specifically. That
unity,
that
and
group,
conformity, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's all they're asking for, but they have none of it right now because nobody's guiding those conversations.
And everyone doing their own thing.
Absolutely. 503-250-1080. Some texts that we have, and we'll read those as we get set for a big day in the local sports scene as well. Not just the Pac-12 potentially making a decision on college football, the Blazers and Timbers. Pivotal games today. Blazers in a must win. Dusty and Cam on the Fan. All right, we're asking you, up to the players or up to the presidents, Where do you stand on this? College football, it looks like the Big Ten and Pac-12 will be voting today on what to do with their seasons. I hope that they go for the delay. I mentioned this earlier, Peter Burns of ESPN. He's joined the show before. He's a SEC football analyst. He goes, hey, kick the can down the road. He proposes a 10-game schedule that starts Halloween, so October 31. Conference championship games are the end of January. College football semifinals on February 13th and the championship game on the 22nd. That's a 15-week window to get in 10 games. It gives you flexibilities for buys, holidays, potential rescheduling of games if needed in there. And I, for one, am on board with that. I think that would be a good idea. Because the concern about a spring season is if you go March, April, May, then you're just bringing it right back in August and starting another season. And then you have larger safety concerns. If it ends at the end of February, I don't see the issue of kick it back another month. If you're Pac-12, if you're going to start on the 19th or 26th or whatever, bump it back to late October.
Well, just like you
where
don't,
are you at there?
Just like you don't have to start the season right now, you don't have to make the decision to start it much, much, much later. You can just say, we have a plan to start it later. We'll let you know.
It's also really confusing about how the Big Ten and the Pac-12, and they are going strictly on the medical advice and the SEC saying, yes, so are we, but we still are going to wait and make our decision. I wonder how different their information is that they're getting, if it is different, but we'll never know that because there is not a lot of, I don't know. We do not have a lot of clarity when it comes to a willingness to open up and tell us all of the facts of the matter. That's college. Oh, that's life, right? They're not going to sit there and tell us anything. Even though they should, because then it would give us a better understanding of what's going on. But your text at 503-250-1080. If there's no other students on campus, then players would be safe to stay healthy and play football. I haven't heard of colleges are having school instruction or not. A lot of them are going hybrid campuses, but remember the rallying cry at the beginning of this from Mark Emmert and university presidents themselves is if we do not have students on campus, we will not have sports. I wonder if that has changed recently and the tides have turned on that one recently because a hybrid model is what most universities are doing where you have partial instruction, partial online instruction. And if there's a willingness to sit there and say, all right, we'll still close the campus, but we'll go and we'll still play sports, that would change the dynamic there. Because the big question is like, all right, what happens when you get 20,000 students on campus? Then what? Because that is a big game changer for the student athletes and those points of contact and the exposure that you could have to COVID. So I don't know if that has changed, but that was a big sticking point. And you also have to remember that when you're looking at the university presidents, it's like they don't want to play favorites because they value the engineering student who brings a ton to the university just as much as they do a football player. What is the value to the school? I think the football player monetarily might, but that's not how university presidents weigh these things often, right? They weigh it on academic prestige more so than your athletic prestige.
Well, for the athletes and the athletic departments and the teams, the sports is the pie. For the presidents, the sports is a piece of the pie.
Faux show. You know, and this texture says, what, October to February? You mean right during flu season? Yeah, I guess. I mean, as long, if they have a vaccine for COVID by then, there's flu vaccines as well. And that's the big one here is that like, hey, there's no vaccine to this one. And until then, there is no easy answer to what's going on. And we've heard that from day one. From a lot of these decision makers in all sports, not just college sports, professional sports as well. The bubble in the NBA, though, is going on tonight. The Blazers got a big one, 3:30 tip against the Dallas Mavericks. It appears that Dallas is going to be healthy, and they're not resting guys today. Casey Holdall of the Trailblazers, he gave out their injury report. Everybody that has been in the bubble and been playing, most of them are probable for today's game against Portland. Seth Curry has right leg soreness. Dorian Finney-Smith hip strain, and Maxi Kleber has a bruise. They're all probable. Everybody else has been out for a significant amount of time for Dallas, and Courtney Lee and Dwight Powell. So they're healthy, and they're playing for something because they've got two games to make up a one-game cushion on the Utah Jazz, who they beat yesterday in the bubble. The good thing that the Blazers have going, they had a day off, and Dallas is in the second of a back-to-back. You're going to need this one big time. Who guards their unicorns? Because they've got Luka. I mean, Luka Doncic is a matchup nightmare.
I feel like Zach might be able to handle Kristaps to a degree, just because, you know, he doesn't have the beef. But because I don't know that Nurk is going to be able to keep up with Kristaps, and maybe you're hoping that he's not going inside.
But he's got a left knee injury.
Oh, Kristaps does?
Yeah, they had last night. They were without Kristaps and Luka, who has a right ankle. But again, going by Casey Holdall's injury report, it just seems like everybody else is go, baby.
I mean, what do you do with Luka, period? That guy is such a handful.
I would say so. They've got a ton on the line. Dallas does. Because if they get the sixth seed, they avoid the Clippers in that first round. And the Blazers must win if they want a spot in this bad boy. They've got two games left. It's Dallas today, Brooklyn on Thursday. They have a half-game lead on the Phoenix Suns, a one-game lead on the San Antonio Spurs, and they're just a half-game back of the Memphis Grizzlies. Today's schedule, you could have some carnage, right? Because Tuesday's slate, you have the Suns play the 76ers at 1:30. The Grizzlies play the Celtics at 2, 3:30, Blazers-Mavericks, and the Spurs have the Rockets at 11 a.m. So those are your games that you need to watch out for. Portland versus Dallas will be 3:30 today on TNT. Must win for the Blazers and Rip City. Going to have another huge one from Dame. Climb on, boys. Time to carry to the playoffs.
You think they get it?
I think they're in the play-in, yeah. I do think they get into the play-in.
No, do you think they get a win today?
Oh, God. Yeah, because they need this one. They need this one big time. So yeah, I do believe
the more
so.
Desperate team prevails.
Right, that's right. All right. Wow. What a weird day in sports with all of this information going on about the Pac-12 and the Big Ten and what's going to happen there.
Stay tuned to the Fan all day. We'll have the coverage.
Yeah. As soon as a decision is made, if a decision is made, we'll have it for you. We got the Herd with Colin Cowherd from 9 to noon, noon to 3, Dirt and Sprague, 3 to 7, Primetime with Isaac and Suk, and then Ducky Insider with Joey Mack, 7 to 8 p.m. Keep it right here all day. We'll keep you abreast of everything going on with the Pac-12, their conference call with university presidents today on a decision of college football season. Blazers, 3:30. Timbers, 5:30 in the MLS's back championship. Woo! Let's go! All right, have a great one. We will see you tomorrow from 6 to 9 a.m. This has been Dusty and Cam on The Fan.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.